The civil war in Syria has displaced huge numbers of people, with millions fleeing to neighboring countries, tens of thousands seeking the dangerous, sometimes deadly passage to Europe, along with refugees from other war-torn countries. The world's humanitarian resources are struggling to keep up, and the nations of the European Union are debating how many refugees each of them should take in.
The crisis is reaching into American politics. The U.S. has taken in about 1,500 Syrian refugees since the conflict started. Secretary of State John Kerry said yesterday the country can take in more.
We are committed to increasing the number of refugees that we take, and we are looking hard at the number that we can specifically manage.
The White House put a number on that effort today, aiming to take in 10,000 refugees next year. Wisconsin Governor and presidential candidate Scott Walker disagreed this week, saying the United States has invested enough.
No, we shouldn't be taking on any more Syrian refugees right now.
Two Wisconsin guests join us now for a look at the scope of the crisis and the humanitarian challenges it poses to the world. Karen Solheim is clinical professor of nursing at UW-Madison. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Elise Cohen is assistant professor of political science at UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc. Elise, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Elise, in speaking and writing about this issue, you say the Syrian refugee crisis is the biggest since World War II. What is the scope of this problem?
Yes, well, a lot of people are saying that right now this is actually one of the defining humanitarian challenges of our times. To sort of give you a sense of that, just looking at the Syrian refugee crisis, which is one that I've really focused on in my research, we're talking about over 4 million Syrians that are registered with the United Nations, and that's just referring to registered refugees. So those are just the ones that have been able to get out of the Syrian conflict and civil war, which is also now a proxy war. Inside of Syria, of course, we're looking at over 7 million that are internally displaced with another level of humanitarian crisis, but lacking the international protection that's supposed to come with being a refugee. So to give you a sense of those numbers, I mean, right now, in terms of a global perspective, we have over 59 million that are displaced and about 20 million that are refugees. But right now, Syrians are really leading in terms of the numbers, and it's estimated that one in every four refugees worldwide right now is from Syria.
And Karen, with numbers like that, millions taking refuge in neighboring countries, huge numbers going even further away, what are the biggest priorities from a humanitarian perspective?
Well, really, people have to start with the basics. So food, shelter, water, soap, clothing, and then move on really to health care. And people could be, how people fare when they've left their homes depends upon their health condition before they left. So if they have chronic illnesses and can't get medicines, that's going to put them at risk. Likely they've suffered trauma in their flight of some kind, and so may have mental health issues. They're grieving from loss of their homes. People may have mental health issues from the trauma. And then, of course, in such conditions, people may be more exposed to communicable diseases, so that's another issue.
And does the world have the capacity to provide that huge list of things you just mentioned, the basics, the healthcare infrastructure, quickly enough to make a difference?
I'm an optimist. I think we do. It's very difficult to organize and manage the logistics. But when it comes down to it, I think it's a matter of political will.
And Elise, let's follow up on the political will there, especially in the developed nations, Europe, the United States. Are those countries meeting their responsibility to help deal with humanitarian crises like this?
That's a great question, because as my fellow professor here said, it really is a problem of political will. It's not about capacity. So if you look at Europe, for example, we see that it's really a small number compared to the European Union with all 28 member states. You know, it's roughly 500 million people. Right now, those coming in, most of which are refugees, fleeing these mass atrocity situations in the Middle East and Africa, it's about 340,000 that are coming in. That's only 0.068, actually, percentage-wise of the population. So, I mean, the capacity is there, and certainly when you take into account the level of wealth in these developed countries, it really is a political will issue. Same thing for the U.S. I mean, we have this availability where we could follow up on the international legal expectations Nations for this concept called responsibility to protect. A lot of world leaders actually say that we do agree that all human life deserves to be protected under international law, but then when it comes down to it goes back to the political problem and those that are actually the voters in these countries, many of which are, of course, strong democracies, the pressures from those voters not wanting to take in these people and their perceptions of who these people are, that really right now, in my view, is one of the chief obstacles to meeting our humanitarian responsibilities.
Talking to Elise Cohen from UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc and Karen Solheim, clinical professor of nursing at UW-Madison, looking at the Syrian refugee crisis. Let's follow up on that point, Elise. You've written actually about this, a bias against people, migrants, refugees, whatever they're called in the local country. You see personal and political bias affecting rescue efforts, humanitarian efforts.
Absolutely. So in one of the projects, I was looking at the public opinion data, and we can see these trends have been in the European countries really in the last 5 to 10 years. They've been growing sort of an anti-migrant sentiment. Of course, we're familiar with similar sentiments even in our own democracy. But the view that these people coming in are just part of a larger migrant population that perhaps is going to be a burden on the economy or take, you know, valuable social services from the citizens in those places. And these anti-migrant views, you know, viewing the refugees really just lumping them in with migrants rather than seeing the exact circumstances, which are truly emergency humanitarian catastrophic circumstances that they're fleeing, has resulted in anti-migrant violence. Germany is one of those cases where, even though they have done an amazing job in leading among the European countries to take in refugees and grant asylum, we've seen over 200 arson attacks on asylum seeker shelters. We've seen physical assaults on people that are either, you know, refugees or are even just perceived to be migrants or refugees or somehow, you know, non-Europeans. So this is really having a problem, and it's especially for those that have survived, if they have made the dangerous journey from the Middle East and North Africa across the Mediterranean, if they have made that dangerous journey, which many have perished, over 2,000, according to the International Organization of Migration, have already died trying to make that journey, sea crossing journey this year. But once they make it, then if they are faced with these anti-migrant sentiments and actual physical attacks or arson attacks on the shelters, they are still not safe.
And Karen, we've been focusing so far on the role of governments in the West. You've worked on the role of non-governmental organizations in providing relief in refugee situations. Where do they fit into the picture?
Well, they're huge. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees partners with over 600 NGOs to deliver their deliver health care and basic services to refugees and internally displaced people around the world. They do all sorts of things, from provide education to emergency health care to ongoing health care, community health education, all sorts of things. Just about every service inside a camp and often to displaced people is delivered by international NGOs. May I add something?
Yes.
About the movement of people across the world?
Yes, please.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees has three durable solutions for refugees. One is repatriation, going back voluntarily to their home country when things are peaceful. The second is integration into the local community. And the third option is resettlement to a country like the U.S., Australia, and so forth. And just under 1% of refugees are resettled in countries outside where they live in asylum. So it's really a very small percentage of refugees that are actually resettled around the world. I think there's room for taking more.
We're talking about the Syrian refugee crisis with UW-Madison clinical nursing professor Karen Solheim and political scientist Elise Cohen of UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think the United States should do in response to the refugee crisis? Should we join European countries in taking in tens of thousands of refugees? Is this a story that's personally affected you in some way? And if you're you're from Syria, please share your thoughts. You can call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation about the Syrian refugee crisis. Karen Solheim is with us. She's the director of the Global Health Initiative at UW-Madison. Also with us is Elise Cohen, assistant professor of political science at UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What, if anything, should the U.S. be doing in response to the growing refugee crisis? If you're from the region, do you have family members affected by this? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. I will go to a caller now. We have Stephen on the line in Milwaukee. Stephen, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call in. I'm extremely liberal. I'm a school teacher. I'm a socialist. And I'm very much a humanitarian, I feel. In this particular instance, though, I think that it's slightly different. I think that right now the economy is horrible. The unemployment numbers are misreported. There are a tremendous amount of people, and I work in the inner city. There's a tremendous amount of children who are starving right now. They're malnourished. Their parents don't, some of them don't have jobs, incomes of nothing other than the assistance they're getting from the government, which has been reduced. I think that we have a moral obligation to the impoverished in this country and the shrinking middle class.
Stephen, thanks a lot for the call. I want to bring our guests in on this. Elise Cohen, you've written about the concept of responsibility to protect. Can you make the case that with problems here at home, we have a responsibility to protect people in the situation in a situation like Syria?
Yeah, it's a really great point. So I thank the caller for bringing this up. This is actually one of the key issues that we see, not just in our democracy, but in others as well, when the question of taking in refugees that are fleeing these mass atrocity situations comes, you know, well, how does this compare to the problems that we have in our own economy and with our own people, and certainly perhaps our own levels of oppression or human rights violations that we're still solving? And, you know, my response would be that one does not prohibit the other. So the fact that there is a greater need to address the poverty and problems regarding the economy in this country does not mean that we cannot also fulfill our responsibility to protect. Let me give a little bit of context for this caller's question. Already, you know, the U.S. takes in about 70,000 refugees a year. The Congress each year sort of sets a cap or a ceiling on that number. The issue with that is that they also set regional caps so that, you know, only a certain amount can be from the Middle East and North Africa. No places as of now have been specifically set aside for only Syrians. And when they start talking about, well, maybe 5 or 10,000, this is not clear how it would relate to the broader global cap on the number of refugees that can come in. So we're already doing a lot. We're already giving billions in humanitarian aid. So I don't think it's a question of we can't do anything to help a humanitarian crisis. It really is part of our history and how we define ourselves that we are contributing international aid and helping with these sorts of situations. The question is really just a restructuring and looking at the system we have, which right now takes about 1 to 2 years for all of the screenings that are done in order to give asylum. So it's really something that's more procedural that we could address, and it doesn't mean that at the same time our elected officials can't also work on fixing our domestic problems.
Thanks a lot for that call. And Karen, can you lay out some, maybe the urgency of the lives faced by people maybe in a camp in Turkey or Lebanon right now?
What might their lives be like, or what's the urgency for
exactly.
them to have help? Certainly, yeah. Really, the population in Syria right now, over half are living below, or 86% are below the poverty line, living in extreme poverty. So it is, I think, very crucial. And camps, the condition in camps varies. In some camps in Turkey are very well set up, providing education, good health care, markets, people grow gardens, and people from those types of camps haven't fled. Other camps aren't quite so fortunate. Some of the world food budget is being cut, and people are being separated from their food given by the UN. So I think there is a very crucial need, and I like to think of the U.S. as a really an important global player and citizen, and without demeaning our own issues at home, which are extremely important, but I'd rather see it as a both-and issue, and we're clearly involved in the politics of Syria and looking at our policy there and solutions, so I think we have to work at the issue from both ends.
Talking to Karen Solheim and Elise Cohen about the ongoing Syria refugee crisis. Art joins us next in Green Bay. Art, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I've heard so many people that probably come from the same perspective as your guests complain for many years that the U.S. can't be the policeman of the world. But now you see what happens when the policeman of the world pulls out of areas that need policing. This is a completely created crisis created by the foreign policies of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and carried on by John Kerry. And now what you're seeing is not necessarily a refugee issue, but a mass migration issue. And if you read some of the information that's provided by the Islamic groups, you'll find that what they're looking at doing is establishing a caliphate worldwide by doing exactly what this is going on, what's going on now.
Art, I want to give a guest a chance to chime in on that. Elise, quick response to what Art brought up there.
Yes, this is another common response, and there are two points I want to raise in the framing of the caller's question that I think are important. So he's bringing up on one hand the militant groups like ISIS. We also have Jabhat al-Nusra and others that are involved in Syria. This is one of the reasons that the humanitarian emergency for the Syrian people is so dire, because not only is it from the government, the Assad regime, barrel bombing within Syria, but also these militant groups that are really wreaking havoc on ordinary people that are trying to flee. So this is an important thing to keep in mind when we think about the fact that many of these refugees are coming from a Muslim-majority country, which scares some Americans, and just kind of lumping together all Muslims with the militant groups. But actually, they are the victims of the militant groups. They are the primary victims of ISIS in Syria, are the Syrian people that are fleeing. And the second point is that framing it as a migrant problem. So, you know, refugees have been defined in international law and the U.S. Refugee Act that follows it as somebody leaving or fleeing from a well-founded fear of persecution based on their race or nationality or political opinion, among other things. And we have enough evidence at this point that we can definitely say, and the United Nations has said, anybody that is fleeing the situation in Syria absolutely qualifies and meets these conditions as a refugee. And migrant is really just someone who chooses to leave because they have a choice and they're maybe looking for improving their economic situation. But the vast majority of these people are refugees, do meet that standard that has been set out by international law.
We'll leave it there for now. Elise, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Karen, thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you.
We've been hearing from Karen Solheim, clinical professor of nursing and director of the Global Health Initiative at UW-Madison, and Elise Cohen, assistant professor of political science at UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc, talking about the refugee situation in Syria.